to the first ever episode of Rebooked. It's a podcast about pro wrestling. It's done by nerds who really, really like pro wrestling storylines. And we're so excited because there's so much going on in the world of professional wrestling, and there's so much to talk about. Before we do that, though, we should actually talk about, like, you know, who the hell we are, why the hell we're doing this, and why the hell you're watching. So, firstly,
that should be a personal question for the viewer, really.
That really should be. I'm Alex. I go by GB or Golden Boy. I am a professional esports commentator. But if you have followed All Elite Wrestling way back in the day, I was actually one of the first people to commentate All Elite Wrestling. So, alongside Jim Ross and Excalibur, it was the best time of my life. So that's my claim to fame. Matt, what about you? You seem to have a bit more.
Not as far as fame goes, but as far as a little bit of work here and there in the pro wrestling industry, I have been in the biz, as they say, since, started training in 2011, but had my first matches in 2011 and got a lucky hire by WWE's developmental system in 2012. Wow. And I was a part of there from FCW to NXT up to WWE. All the way until everyone's favorite period of time, the pandemic, which a lot of people went all over the place. And so a lot of things exploded. Since then, though, I've continued in the wrestling industry with companies like Impact, which is now TNA, and, of course, New Japan Pro Wrestling on and off as well. So I keep it all in. I've been a wrestler as well as kind of a manager. And then for the last several years, I've been a pretty much full-time commentator for multiple brands. So
how are you liking the commentary life, by the way?
I love it. And it was one of those things. This isn't an interview with me, but I wasn't sure. It was kind of just tossed out to me.
You never know when you're going to get it, right?
Yeah, well, the funny thing is...
Same thing happened to me in esports. Go on.
Dude, it was like... it was so funny, and I'll keep this very, very brief. Tom Hannafin, who's my broadcast partner in TNA now, like 7 years ago or whatever, I was in NXT. He was just starting, kind of just getting his thing going in the announce department.
Yep.
He came to me and was like, hey, would you want to come do some commentary with me sometime? And I kind of blew him off. Because
why did you pull him off?
Because I was polite, I think.
We gotta get Tom on the show sometime.
We will. We will.
Version of his story.
But it was just I was on the up coming up, trying to get my stuff started in NXT, and I had it in my head the idea of like if anybody tries to get me to do anything that's not wrestling, it means I'm gonna be pigeonholed as a manager or as a commentator or as an interviewer,
bro.
And I didn't want to do it. I was like, I'm not giving any. It was so stupid and short-sighted and like childish at the time, but I'm not giving anybody ammo to put me anywhere else other than the ring
because you still see your name in lights,
right?
As you always do, right? Well, you always should. It's a good thing, you know. Speaking of names and lights, by the way, the wild card, the one that I'm the most excited for. When I was putting this together, I was like, I need an anchor. I need someone that is going to actually.
Is that a weight
like,
joke?
Starting off hot.
I'm going to get someone that is going to bring the thunder each and every single week to the squared circle. It's the one and only, the incomparable Jake Bennett.
Yeah, my name's Jake Bennett. I have zero stroke here, I have none.
That's not true, Jake. So for context, for those watching and listening, me and Jake, we used to work together at G4. I worked with him briefly toward the tail end of my time at G4, but he was there cooking with the X-Play team the entire time. Funny segments, funny bits, literally, and I tell this to everyone I know, one of the funniest people that I have had the pleasure of meeting in my life. So I'm just glad you said yes to doing this, man.
I got nothing else going on, so it was this or
you're really selling it, Jake.
Pick you up. Every time I build you up, you just knock it down like three.
Look,
or four
I'm a man.
Bro.
I'm a humble man. I can't be anything but humble. That said, I am the funniest person GB has ever met. And knows and probably will meet. I worked with X-Play. I worked with GB. He was one of my favorite hosts to work with. And I'm just happy to be here. I'm just happy to be here.
I think we all are, man. And I think that's part. So
the reason why I wanted to make this podcast, right, is A, my wife told me that I needed to do this, otherwise the papers were coming. So she just wasn't, I just kept explaining pro wrestling storylines. You know, you see the memes, right? You know, like the new Travis Kelce meme where he's just like yelling, right? That's me at my wife, you know? I'm like at the screen and I'm pointing. When MJF and Adam Cole fought at Wembley Stadium, I'm like looking at the screen. I was like, Cynthia, you can see exactly why they did the thing that they did right here. And she's like, bro, they're in tights wrestling.
You're not relax. Broadcasting right now. What are you, you know? Yeah.
But I just I've been a nerd for pro wrestling stories for a really long time, and also coming from esports. For those who aren't familiar, esports is competitive video game tournaments played, you know, a variety of different scales. I've been working in it for around 10 years now, and like esports always struggled with storylines. And the thing that would always come back, everyone would always come to me and say, "GB, how do we get this to feel more like WWE?" How do we get this to feel more like a pro wrestling thing, right? And I'm like, yeah, because it's great. It makes sense. It's fun. It's silly. It's whimsical. It's serious. It's thought-provoking. But at the same time, it's a hand can come out of nowhere and you know, change the course of history with a storyline. Or you could have two friends hugging in Wembley. Or you can have one of the greatest, longest runs in the modern era of professional wrestling. It's insane how far you can go with the storylines. So
to the point, by the way, folks, that if you ever go, I've been to a couple events that GB's hosted at where he straight up steals Triple H's Are You Ready opening. And it works. It freaking works, man.
Actually, I have a little silly, fun story about that that I think will be really fun to share with the podcast. So years ago, I was doing the Overwatch League finals at Barclays Center. It was a monumental moment in esports history for multiple reasons. I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about, Matt. Both good and bad. But the good part was that a kid from Brooklyn who lived five stops away from where that venue was walked out onto that stage and got to yell and scream and have fun with over 25,000 fans at a building that not too long ago, I actually watched The Rock come out and do like a whole bit with Rusev years ago. So like, actually, I think you were you there?
Probably not. That was Rusev probably still in NXT. No, but not with The Rock. That would have been.
That was Lana.
Alexander Rusev.
And that was still Alexander Rusev. Yeah. But I saw him come out, and I was like, "Oh my god, this is so cool! This is amazing!" And then, like a few years later, I'm hosting a building in the same venue that I like went to go watch pro wrestling, and it was just really, it was really cool, and it like honestly left a profound impact on my life. So much so that I did the Are You Ready thing, and. Because, you know, Triple H is one of my favorite wrestlers ever. And he is just a hype man that really very few can match. And, like, I thought this would be a great way to, like, capstone the Overwatch League finals. And it worked out. Turns out Triple H saw it, right? Triple H saw the tweet. He saw it go viral. He saw me do the thing. And then he told Michael Cole to reach out to me. And I was like... That's amazing, right? That's what I would have said.
Oh yeah.
If I had known. This is where the story gets a little funny. So Mike Rome, who we all know is the ring announcer for Monday Night Raw, great guy, messaged me on Instagram one day because Michael Cole told Mike Rome, hey, can you find this guy?
Keeps going down the chain. Yeah.
So then Mike Rome messages me on Instagram. Now, if anyone knows me, you just one look at my Instagram can tell you I don't really use it that much. I use it in spurts. It's probably because of ADD. I have no idea, but I just don't really do it. And there was a message there from Mike Rome saying, hey man, we're really excited to bring you in for an audition potentially and you know, see if you fit with WWE. I saw that message a year and a half later, and
I did not know this. I didn't know this.
Oh. Yeah. So I saw that message about a year and a half later.
That hurts my soul.
I had realized that I was at WrestleMania. It was Kofi Mania that year. Another one. Mm-hmm. Top five stories. Mm-hmm. Dead ass. And in that Raw after Mania, I pulled up my phone because I saw that he was following me, and I was like, oh, I wonder if I could like meet him, because like we talked with each other online. Like, I saw he followed me, and then I responded to his message, like to his like whenever he'll respond to a comment on a picture or something like that, right? Never thought to look at my actual messages. So when I went to message him and I saw it, I was like, oh crap, that's really embarrassing. Good news is I ended up doing like a few other things, so it worked out. But man, that would have been really cool, huh?
Check those DMs, kids. Check those DMs.
But check those DMs, kids.
You never would have met me if it hadn't been for that huge,
to be fair, if
stupid
I had,
mistake that right. you made.
If I had, and again, you know, life, I don't know. I could have avoided so much, right? I could have avoided all of G4, Jake. That would have been amazing. You know what I mean?
Couldn't have, yeah.
No, but honestly, I got to do tie-in games. I got to do like Valorant and Halo and a bunch of other games. I got to continue. I got to do AEW. So I'm not like too disappointed in it, but definitely I'm curious to see the multiverse where I did respond to that to that message. That actually would be super cool. So yeah. So anyway, that's why we made a podcast. Thought storylines would be cool. And that's a good story. So hopefully that hooked you. In any case, let's move on, huh? Let's talk about the storylines that actually in pro wrestling that hooked us. I mentioned one that was very personal and very awesome that I enjoyed, which is Kofi Mania. Jake, is there any storyline in professional wrestling history? Doesn't matter the Fed, doesn't matter the situation, doesn't even matter if it was good, just if you liked it.
WrestleMania 9.
Ooh.
All right, young...
Set the stage.
And it's good that you said it doesn't have to be good. Let me tell you. So, young...
Oh, wait, I think I know what you're talking about.
young Jake Bennett, living in Huntsville, Alabama, no access to professional wrestling, goes one day to the old movie rental store with his father, right? And goes over into the sports section, just perusing, wanting to just looking, taking it all in, right? And then I see a VHS box set of WrestleMania 9. Mm. And all my friends were into wrestling. They all watched it on their own. I remember coming in first grade to a new school, the one I ended up going to for the rest of my days. And
you're not dead.
Well, part of me died there, so
that's a story.
That's a story for a different time. But I remember coming in first grade, and all my friends were super into it. They had even broken off into a WWF and a WCW kind of faction because they would all go out on the playground and wrestle, right? And so there were people that were kind of in charge of it. And every now and then the WCW and the WWF would wrestle each other, but they needed a champion. Mm-hmm. And then here comes this massive jamoke. And they were like, they were fighting. Who's going to get the big kid? Who's going to get the new big kid?
Okay. Like fighting for your allegiance.
Fighting for my allegiance. Cause I came in, in my time in school, was always the biggest kid. Now, I didn't go to a very big school anyway, but I was always... I mean, you've seen me in person, GB. I'm not a small guy.
Tall dude, Jason. Yeah. Jake towers me, okay?
Yeah, people. So I felt, yeah. So I felt like... I felt like, man, I guess I need to, like, get more into this and research it, right? Well, the only tape that was available when I went to this movie store was WrestleMania 9. That was the only one for some reason that was available.
That's Caesar's Palace, oh, right? Yeah.
Correct. Yes. That is Caesar's Palace. What was the one that jumped out to me, the match that jumped out to me? It was not Bret Hart and Yokozuna, okay?
That's fine.
It was Crush versus Doink the Clown.
Get the hell out of here. How and why? I need to know all the details.
For some reason, I got the Doink gimmick right off the bat. I was
like a crazy clown.
He's a crazy psychopathic clown.
Yeah, he just looks like he
It's a pretty well-defined character.
Yes.
That's
yes.
a clown. Okay.
It's a clown, and they didn't try to make he was like WWF's Joker. Yeah. Right. Like that's, and for some reason that just, I just got it and it just spoke to me. And then during the middle of the match with Crush, this son of a bitch goes under the ring and another friggin' doink comes out from underneath to cause crush the match. And
son of a bitch.
Yeah. And 7-year-old Jake's mind was blown. How are there two of these? There shouldn't even be one, but now there's two.
I'm literally looking at the clip right now. Oh yeah, my word.
Yeah. And for some reason that got its teeth in me and I was fascinated. I thought it was hilarious that his finisher was called the whoopee cushion, right? Whenever I played Royal Rumble on the SNES.
Bro,
the SNES.
He was so good, though.
He was so OP on that game, right? And so that's who I played with. When I went over to my buddy's house, he had SNES, he had Royal Rumble. Man, I was playing as Doink the Clown. I don't know why, but that's what got me.
Hooked,
but
dude.
Then also crazy. the Money Inc. tag match later, for some reason, IRS, I was like, oh yeah, sure. Everybody hates taxes. My dad bitches about it all the time. I understand why I hate this guy. Right. It was all these ridiculous, silly gimmicks that I was like, man, this is like real life cartoons fighting each other.
Mm. And well, I mean, when you look at Crush's hair, I mean, for sure, it definitely stood
100%,
out.
100%.
Like, 100%. I'm jealous.
But as I got older, I started really loving, like, I loved Mankind.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he was a guy that I was like, oh, man, like, he's kind of like me, the chubby kid who just, like, likes getting in there and scrapping it up and, you know, will do anything to win. And that spoke to me, right? Like, I understood that. And you know, yeah, just as I got older, it was things like that. It was Stone Cold versus Vince McMahon. I swear to God, I was like that one time on Raw, I was like, did he seriously just get fired? What happens now? You know,
wait, like, does he get his 2 weeks notice?
Is he getting a severance package? Yeah. What's the deal? Yeah, exactly.
He makes them a lot of money. He should get at least some kind of, I don't know, severance pay.
Right.
Oh man.
And
that's good.
And when my school finally started, got football when I was in, sixth grade, mm-hmm. To this day, my favorite number is 71. That's the number I wore my whole time playing football. Whenever I make a character in a sports game, it's number 71. And that's because I had been told that was Bill Goldberg's number when he played football.
Wow. Okay.
And I later learned that that's not right.
I was waiting, but I was like,
well, shit, I'm sticking with it now. I mean,
I'm like, oh, it's a big Goldberg mark, but you're not even a correct Goldberg mark.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man, that's good stuff.
So that's kind of what got me. And then, it was a whole thing of like when, you know, in younger grades, we would go over to friends' houses for pay-per-views.
Yeah.
We would wrestle before and after. I remember one year when a friend of mine, his parents rented us a bouncy castle, so we could get in there and actually powerbomb each other and do all this kinds of crazy stuff. I got elbowed in the nose and was bleeding all
over. Please don't do that at home.
Don't
do it at home.
You're going to, but don't.
You're gonna.
Yeah. but yeah, that's just like I just started really just really got into it. And it started with frickin' Doink the Clown.
It
was the only tape. It was the only tape available. And then after that, I started going and renting other ones.
Everyone's entry point into wrestling is just so fat. Like, honestly, if you're watching this right now, like, let us know. Comments if you're watching on YouTube.
Absolutely.
What was your entry point to pro wrestling? Like, what specifically do you remember that was like the thing that attracted you? Because that I think is quite profound. Like, I'm actually thinking back into like what it was that caught me, and actually the thing that attracted me was Owen Hart. I was a really big fan of Owen Hart because I was the little brother, and my bigger brother, he loved Bret Hart. He loved The Excellence of Execution, still loves The Excellence of Execution to this day. How could you not? And it was like cool to see. That's a different situation, man. Okay. But, you know, he'll wear number 71. He'll be okay.
Sure.
And I remember seeing like the Owen Hart slammy storyline as he's like running around with his slammy, just like constantly waving it in people's faces, just like the look at me, I'm successful, look at me. Oh man, it was so funny, and I related to it as the younger brother because I was very look at me. I didn't realize it at the time, but as I look back on it, I'm like, oh yeah, that's why I liked Owen Hart, because he actually spoke to me. So
yeah,
of course, rest in peace to the legend. But yeah, it was a and also, you know, I didn't understand what I was watching back then, right? Like, especially in the ring. And now that I've gone back and I've watched Owen's, like, you know, matches, yeah, I see what literally everyone was saying about the man. He actually was going to be like this, just generational, already was, but then was going to become further and further, like, enshrined in the history of pro wrestling. It would have been beautiful to watch happen in real time. But yeah, so that was me. What about for you, Matt?
I mean, as far as characters and stories and stuff go, like, there's a couple of things. So, like, I didn't grow up with it. Like,
okay,
in like, my Wii, I didn't sit on any uncle's knee watching it when I was, like, three. Like,
fair.
I didn't, because we didn't really, nobody, my big brothers weren't super into it. I think my dad, because my dad used to work with people who ran the Rosemont Horizon, now the Allstate Arena in Chicago. Yeah. So, like, he took them to a couple of things, but it was just because they were in town. It was wrestling, monster trucks, you know, dirt bikes, whatever was the circus, whatever was there, he got tickets to and took my brothers. So they went to wrestling, but they didn't watch it. Especially, we didn't have cable TV until the year 2000 in my household. So we didn't have, like, you know, Monday Night Raw or Nitro.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the big thing for me was, I remember when all the other kids, right in that, like, 99 era, right? That 98, 99, everybody at school, every Tuesday morning.
Doing a Stone Cold Steve Austin.
And I was like, who is this? What is this? How is this?
Yeah.
So, for me, there was a little bit of just FOMO originally. Just like, I don't know what this wrestling stuff is. Like, I've heard of it. I've heard of Hulk Hogan, but I've never really watched it. I don't really know. So, like, when I'm, like, 99, I'm, like, 11 years old. I'm just anywhere I can. My basic, what do you call it? Like, antenna TV, I find
the rabbit ears.
The local channel on Saturday night, they had WWF Metal. Do you remember Metal?
Yeah. Oh, man, I remember that. Holy, that a throwback.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was what that ended up being. It was almost like a weird version of Heat, but it was basically a recap of Raw with, like, a
one
Taka Michinoku match or an S.A. Rios or something like that, right? So that I finally started getting the swing of it. So, like, that's when, right? And then eventually SmackDown came to UPN, and we got cable the summer of 2000. So I started watching Raw, all that. But as far as actual stories, because folks, if you're coming here and you've seen me tweet about it and the rest of us tweet about this and put it out there, our big focus of this show is so much more than just, like, moves and contracts and rumors. It's we're talking about those story driven, character driven things. That, you know, that's what's so unique about pro wrestling in its art form.
You can isolate both of them
in
a really fun, because and oftentimes both of them one influences the other or vice versa. And that is, like, there's really not a lot of other mediums where, like, that can happen, you know, and that's where I find this to be very fascinating. But continue.
Yeah. So, like, one of the first early, like, feuds stories that, like, I get a little bit goosebumps thinking about it, was Cactus, or excuse me, it wasn't Cactus yet, but Foley and Triple H, 99 into 2000.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That whole thing.
That whole arc, that whole
so
run.
So now that's when I finally have the TV to finally see all of it week to week. And, like, I'm doing a little bit of, like, I didn't quite have, like, the internet, we're Googling everything, but, like, I had seen video packages and, like, maybe a tape from, like, a neighbor or something. So, like, all I'd ever known was Mankind, though, at this point, right? And so it was the infamous SmackDown where he takes the mask off, he opens the shirt, he goes, I can't beat you, Triple H, but I know who can. And he rips open the shirt, and Hunter is there. I remember they did it in some DVD, they talk about how well he sold it, and he did. He's just like, agog. Yeah.
Like, it's a whole different person.
And I remember as a kid, I'm like, I had heard of Cactus. I'm like, no way. This is, like, digging deep into the lore. Yeah. He's going back. I was like, I can't believe he's bringing this back. This is insane. I've seen the footage of the dumpsters and the Japan barbed wire footage.
Yep.
Lo and behold, it's so funny now. When you go back, you're like, oh, my God, he's digging way deep. He was, like, Cactus Jack, like, 3 years before that.
Yeah.
Like, in, 96 or whatever.
Yeah.
Or 97. But in my mind, it was, like, way back. He's digging into the lore, the history and everything.
a life of man he left behind.
It's a whole nother world.
To change
three,
it, yeah.
When you're 11 years old, 3 years ago is a lifetime. You're a whole, you're a child. Now you're a big kid. Now, you know what I mean? Like, as adults, the years go by much faster. But at that time, I was like, oh my God, it's been years. This is insane. He's, I can't believe he's going to be the yellow shirt. Oh my God. Like, I got so many goosebumps. And I think on top of it, just like Jake said, Cactus Jack for me and Mick in particular was like my first favorite wrestler because he was at, like, I'm a skinny kid, but it was the same thing. I'm like, I don't have a jock body. I don't have that kind of, I'm kind of awkward and lanky. I'm a skinny kid, but I love wrestling. I want to do it. I saw he was this awkward, weird, strange kid, didn't fit the mold, but God damn, did he bust through. So that was like my first favorite wrestler. So to have that storyline kind of really brewing as I was really getting into like the week in, week out was so, so very cool.
I remember, I actually changed federations, changed allegiances from WCW to WWF at our school, right? Because we all had to, we all were a different wrestler. So when I was with WCW, of course, I was the Giant. But then I jumped ship and I went WWF and I was Mankind and Mick Foley.
Yeah.
I remember going to a party in a dress shirt.
You didn't have to be a big guy. You were able to just be you and have fun as you and not be like, oh, I'm X amount of, you know, feet high, so I need to be the big guy. That had to feel like a rewarding feeling almost, and probably why you resonated so much with Mick, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was hugely empowering too. Like, you know, because it does, you know, being the Giant because you're the biggest kid in school is one thing, but being Mick made you feel like you could do anything. You know, and that's what I think was so powerful about him and all his work that he did. And then you find out when you start to know Mick Foley the person and not Mick Foley the wrestler, you're like, he's the nicest, best person in the freaking world. Like, he's an unbelievable person. And then that just makes you feel even better about liking him, you know?
Yeah. Makes you wonder 100%. As well, just like, like, you know, what happened to bring that story to the forefront, right? That's something I never really...
I thought you were going to say, what happened to make him do the crazy shit? What trauma?
I don't know what therapist has had to answer that question yet, but I don't envy them. But yeah, I mean, you know, that there was... Because one of the things that is oftentimes, and we already touched on, but, you know, it's worth mentioning again, is just how, like, the real life has a tendency to influence what happens in the ring, right? And I definitely want to, you know, dig a little deeper into that one. Maybe a future episode. We'll do that together. But, yeah, this is it's amazing to see how pro wrestling brings us all together. It's also incredible to see the different points that we all got, you know, like, incorporated into it. I wasn't, like, a crazy Mick Foley fan back then. I actually became a fan of Mick Foley when he was doing the three personality gimmick with Dude Love, Cactus Jack, and Mankind.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I love that one. I thought that when he came out of the Royal Rumble as three different people.
That was great.
That was genuinely hilarious. And I was, like, a kid just laughing. So I think, like, when you're that young, when you're watching it and the joy comes through, like, that's really all that matters, right?
Yes.
And that's what the story should always serve, that's what it should always serve in the end. Not even the story, just everything that's being done in the ring, just to have fun with it. So let's have some fun and let us move on.
Hell yes.
Because we might as well just start off with the big boy.
Okay? Are there any big stories in the wrestling world happening right
now? You know what's crazy? There are a few.
You don't say.
There are quite a few. But none bigger than what is going on right now with WrestleMania XL, which, by the way, from a marketing perspective, I just want to point out, is like, WWE just has to be so happy from a marketing perspective of the XL part of WrestleMania XL. It's the biggest event of the year.
Well, that's exactly what the Super Bowl, you know, leaned into a few years ago when they had theirs. So, yeah, you're right. You have to lean into that.
And also, too, you kind of need to lean into it because, you know, all this stuff going on. But we won't really touch on that part of it. Instead, let's focus on, because honestly, there are much better voices having those conversations than we possibly could. So I will encourage you to find those.
And not a fun storyline.
And not a very fun. No, not at all. But let's shift focus to what is going on with WrestleMania XL, the press event fallout, what occurred. So going into this event, and I think we should start off by recapping the story so far. And there's a lot, so I'm going to keep it very simplistic. But as many people remember, years ago, Roman Reigns challenged, it was Brock Lesnar during the pandemic, and essentially, with the assistance of Paul Heyman, the wise man, went and flipped sides and became a bad guy, and then thus started the longest reign in the modern era of professional wrestling history. There's obviously more details to it from there. And if anything, the story has been put together very well from the Kevin Owens feud that happened during the pandemic that then translated over to what was going on with Jimmy and Jay and how they really fleshed out as characters independent of them just being tag team, really good tag team wrestlers. And then, of course, you know, Paul Heyman just being a master of his craft. And then they really just kept that story going where, you know, a threat would show up, a Sami Zayn, a Drew McIntyre, an LA Knight, Randy Orton. They all show up. And then the tribal chief knocks them all down. There are obviously shenanigans always at play with his victories. But that's what makes this story that much more fascinating, because now we fast forward to when Cody Rhodes arrives in WWE, leaving AEW, very big, very well documented, comes in at WrestleMania, makes a massive splash, wins Royal Rumble the next year, goes on to challenge Roman, gets cheated out of the win. Cody doesn't finish his story. The story being, I need to win this belt to honor my father, Dusty Rhodes' legacy. And, now he's getting another shot of redemption. But before that, though, behind the scenes, what was happening, and this it needs to be mentioned, is there were a lot of shakeups internally with executive leadership within WWE. Obviously, it was not very good. And as a result, and I'm guessing in order to appease shareholders and make people happy, they brought in one of the biggest names in entertainment, Dwayne Johnson, to become a board member of TKO Holdings, which is the company that runs UFC and WWE now. Now, one has to wonder what transpired that led to the series of events that occurred. But the long and short of it is that we have been trained to believe that the Royal Rumble is you win it, you get to pick who you fight at WrestleMania, right? But first, you win it, you fight the champion at WrestleMania. Now you win it and you get to pick who you want to fight at WrestleMania. But for some reason, and it still has got a little unexplained, Cody decided to step aside to allow the head of the family, so to speak, which is Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, to come in and challenge Roman Reigns. It was a sick moment, objectively. It was a very sick moment when he stepped aside, and the camera movement was brilliant and all of that. But the fact remains, it just logically didn't make any sense, and thus they had to pivot. Now, I've been talking for a while. Now, anyone else want to take it from here as far as where we are with Cody and The Rock now that we've established a press event?
So the thing is, you can see the writing on the wall of what they wanted to do.
Always. And that always happens.
You know what I mean?
Always happens.
So, like, you're in a rock and a hard place, no pun intended. When, like, you're like, we want to bring him in, but you have this thing going on with Cody. You've already made that decision. And in my head, remember, because let's not forget, The Rock came back at day one, New Year's Day, was when he first dropped the, should I sit at the head of the table, before the Royal Rumble.
Correct.
Which, at that point, you got to imagine he's already had talks about being on the board. That's months and months in advance and all this. So, like, they're starting to something, which in my mind,
I actually think that movement happened a lot faster. I actually think that one happened. Coming from, like, when I used to work at Twitch and stuff like that, and how fast board members would move. I mean, you'd be shocked at the speed upon which the rich will operate in order to cover their butt. So I think
I don't doubt.
There may be a tweet where you find out about it. You know?
Honestly. But go on. Sorry, Matt.
but either way, I mean, he still came in beginning of January, kind of laid that groundwork, which already led to people being like, is he going to be at Mania this year? In my head, I saw this is going to be another, because WWE, to their credit, over the last few years, between, especially with this main event with Roman in particular, the Bloodline, really good at making long-term intriguing stories.
They've knocked it out of the park in a variety of these storylines in an age, Matt, where I think you're not really getting long-term story. You weren't getting a lot of long-term storytelling up until that point. And then, well, you know, in comes the bloodline angle, which
yes. Not only that, and so with The Rock in particular, let's also go look back to his John Cena feud.
Yeah.
Which they had match one.
Twice in a lifetime.
And then, but the next night on Raw was very true. Once in a lifetime again. But it was, I thought, I remember at the time thinking it was very, very cool. Bold, but cool.
Yeah.
The next night, Cena came out and said, I want you next year. And they planted mm-hmm. a seed for one year long. And then they would go away and kind of come back for it because of the Rock schedule and stuff like that. But so anyway, all that to say, like, here, I'm like, oh, this is an early seed. We're not going to see Rock again for 4 or 5 months. And he'll come and drop it again. This is going to build to 41 or something like that.
That's, fair.
That's where I thought maybe it was going to go. But anyway.
That's a good point, though. Sorry to interject real fast, but only reason why is because when I saw it, my initial thought was he's flirting with this idea, but I don't think it will be a title match. That was I was constantly like, I just can't really see how the championship being involved in this would benefit anyone when the title wasn't the what's at stake here. The title was head of the table, the leader of the bloodline, you know, so on and so forth. That's what was at stake to me. The belt was just kind of like a prop almost. So it just made sense it would make sense for Roman to drop it so that this way Cody can continue that path and then The Rock and Roman can kind of settle their thing elsewhere. But it seems as if the plan was maybe have Rock hold gold over his head again, which
maybe, or, you know, like we said, it obviously the behind the scenes, everything with Vince McMahon, everything like that, maybe sped mm-hmm. things up. We need to get much more attention.
Well, and it seems like they wanted to change the press cycle.
Yeah.
Right. That's kind of, and you know, I mean, like, I know people are going to be like, well, it's irresponsible. You know, like, I totally understand, but like, what do you expect them to do? The people who are producing the show, like they got to produce the show, you know, like there's a show that they're making and they just need to continue forward with it. Jake, what has been your perspective on this situation?
Man, I've kind of gone back and forth a few times, but like it feels like, they kind of went into disaster mode like twice. Yeah. In that I don't think that they expected the response. I don't think they at all expected the response that they were going to get online. Mm-hmm. I think it was very much a, let's put the strap on Rock. Let's have him and Roman have this great battle. Let's, you know, Roman and
or
Seth
not,
will put
or
on
not.
Another. Or not.
Or you just have, because if you wanted him to beat Hogan, right, then then why feed Cody to him? To lose again if you want him to beat Hogan. That doesn't make a lot of sense narratively as well.
But. Yeah. And it kind of feels like they started putting out a lot of confusing stuff to muddy the waters, right? To make so people don't know, well, is this what was the plan all along? Is this you know, where are they going with this? And I actually kind of like that because this is one of the first times in a while where I don't know what the hell is going to happen at WrestleMania now. Like I think that I do, but I honestly, I think them pivoting actually is better in terms of storytelling. I think it gives them more options, quite honestly, not just for WrestleMania, but for down the line.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. 100%. So the biggest thing I had when the initial walkout, the initial face-to-face when Rock came out, that was a huge blunder.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see any way around it. I mean, you, thank God, like in a weird, I will never ever say this again, but you can quote me on it now. Like, thank God for the audience. Thank God for the internet a little bit, a little bit. I've dealt with the worst of you guys, but to a degree, because man, I don't see, I having worked there, having been there, I'm often very good at understanding, like, I
the
see
logic
why they did that.
Behind
like,
a decision.
I get, a little bit, like, I get why that. I know it seems weird on TV, but guys, like, I get it. This one, I'm like, I see it being maybe it was the cleanest way to try to go from one to the other, but you just hurt Cody as a character. Correct. Again.
And also, you hurt Seth as well. Yes. I think Seth really... We'll get into it in a second, but I just want to say, I do feel like Cody and Seth, it was weird to see two guys who are just like they've been parading the World Heavyweight Championship as the workhorse championship. Cody, every night, Raw, banger matches. And you're just like, why do it this way for no reason when like the money was already there? You already did the main event with Cody. And you already sold out SoFi. Like,
and what's strange to me is surely someone had to say, guys, I don't know. I don't know if this is quite going to. And in which case, if that was possible and they thought, well, maybe there's some blowback, that reveal could have been done differently to still leave people guessing and see how people were going to react. I think instead of Cody saying, well, I want to take everything from you, but not at WrestleMania, I think you have him say, this is a tough decision. And build that up. And then as he's about to say what his decision is, what his choice is, if you smell like, have him interrupt.
No, that wouldn't have worked.
You don't think so?
No, 100% that wouldn't have worked. Because it would have ended up being the worse than this reaction. Because then at that point, it seems like he's interrupting Cody and that he is putting himself in that position. They wanted to make, because behind the scenes, what I think happened. Having a glimpse of corporate America and also having worked at a little wrestling as well. I think that all this stuff happened. Board members are freaking out. Stock prices are struggling. They're like, okay, we need to figure something out right away. Well, what do? You contact one of the largest entertainment stars in the world. He's about to launch his own football league. He's doing quite well for himself. So you get him involved. He's a brand name. Everyone loves him. Great. We'll bring him in. And then probably as they're bringing him in and talking to him about this, they're like, yeah, and you know what? Let's just do like an awesome, fun match with you and your cousin at WrestleMania and just like, screw it. Let's just do it, right? Like, I would not be shocked if someone approached it with a very flippant perspective like that without understanding the things that are being built. And it's not meant to be an insult to people. It really isn't, because I think that like at a point we're all a little incompetent in like how we do things or how we screw things up. We all have incompetence to a certain degree.
I think that
you know, it's more common that someone was just incompetent in that situation than it was like flat out maliciousness. I genuinely do believe, because it doesn't benefit you to just be like, to just torpedo the guy that you've been building up this entire time and have been making a lot of money off of. It doesn't make sense.
So then the question is, was that decision made by someone who doesn't follow the story?
Someone who wasn't connected to creative?
Right.
Well, all of these decisions are ultimately made by people who aren't
qualified.
They're both
outside of the writers, outside of the producers. Yeah,
it's your head of the show, which in this case now is Triple H. He's ultimately he guides the creative.
He's the one who made.
He's
the
not
decision.
Writing the promos, right? He's not writing, but he's the one saying, "All right, we're going in this direction."
Because he's like, ultimately. "Okay, Cody, in order to justify this, Cody, you're gonna have to go out there and say that you're willing to step aside right now. That's the best way to do it." And then Cody's probably like, "Okay,
yeah, no." And he's a damn team player, and of course he will. One thing we've talked about this on this podcast, all the backstage stuff aside, like let's look at our given circumstances creatively on camera, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what happened in the room or why it happened. We can speculate that maybe at a different time. But here, in this terms of execution, that was my biggest gripe with it. Like you guys said, I think it hurts him so much to come out. What wrestler on the planet, what child who grew up, especially him who grew up in this, wins that shot and says, yeah, I want it all. Now, that to me was just like, you can't.
Yeah.
And we're going to do a little bit of fantasy booking on this from time to time. That's a bit of what this show is about as well. In my mind, not perfect, but a very good execution of that exact same thing to get us to the exact same point even today, potentially. Mm-hmm. Although, I might retcon that in a second, because in a weird way, the backlash to how bad it was,
it made it better.
Fuels the pivot. Yeah, all this said, where I thought a better reaction was, it's a Roman promo. Rock comes out face to face with Roman. Mm-hmm. Just teeing it up even more. Like, is this going down sooner than we think? Remember the last time we saw him, like in the flesh, was back at the beginning of January. Blah, blah, blah. We don't see Cody until maybe it's that one of those last 5 seconds or 10 seconds before they go off the air. He comes through the curtain. Cody's in Gorilla.
Yeah.
Like, you're blowing, kind of just giving him, even if it's silent, that like, you're blowing up my spot kind of look. And him, and even if him and Rock exchange, like, look, I know you got business, but I got to take care of something too. Kind of like put some tension between them. Like,
yeah.
Wait,
yeah,
which way is this going to go? We don't know. And then because you have then the press conference. You could do. Now the choice is, now you can really have Cody make the choice at the press conference.
Yeah.
All right, he heard The Rock. The Rock's got unfinished business. But I've got my Rumble win. What's going to be? And then you can almost do the exact same thing. But to your point, what we were saying, the backlash almost makes this spicier.
So I just wanted to say something about that, like, with The Rock and him having tension, is that, so there are a few
like
ways
they
that
hugged
you,
man, like he was like, yeah, no problem, bro, like you can have my WrestleMania, and that's what made me go, then there was
like that moment where like he like was talking to him, which is what you're talking about, right, where you're like, oh, this is like a very emotional moment. And look, I mean, I really don't want to be the guy who mentions that I worked with the guy, but I did, so I'm gonna just say it, because I know him a little bit, like having worked with him. He's just like a really nice guy, genuinely.
Yes.
And like when he talks to you, like that's how he talks to you. That's how DJ, how Dwayne talks to you. He'll get close
DJ,
to you. He'll like,
good Lord.
Yeah, that's what he calls
himself.
Come on. That's his name.
That's what the people close to him call. You know, he's DJ.
Okay. Well,
I'm sorry you don't know him, Jake. God, I'm sorry me and GB have met him. And talked with him, and you haven't.
I forgot, but GB, he and GB are best
Jealousy's
friends.
Jealousy's an ugly color.
I forgot. We have a new goal in this show. We got to get Jake to meet The Rock. That is our objective. All right, we're going to...
He don't want none.
Yeah.
He don't want none.
So the thing is, you know, I'm sure in that moment, he probably was just like talking to him, saying something really nice, just trying to be like, hey, appreciate you, so on and so forth. Or was doing something for the show, right? There's a variety of different ways it could have gone. Like, assuming, you know, doesn't help anyone. But the only reason why I mention that is because I just struggle with this idea that, like, it's like he's coming in and he just wants to, like, ruin everyone's time and stuff like that.
Sure.
Like, that just doesn't... It doesn't seem like something he would do, but you know what? I mean, also, I guess people change. I don't want
to
make that assumption. So,
then
I think it's just
my
dangerous
question.
Going on that path.
We somewhat know where it's going now. Where do you think it was going? Like,
so
Rock
and Roman one on one.
Well, yeah, Rock and Roman one on one. But what's the plan beyond that? Like, do you have Rock win and then Cody gets his chance at Rock, or do you have Roman win and Roman gets his chance at SummerSlam? Or
yeah,
100% it would have been.
See, it would have been Cody Seth, and we didn't even mention it, but CM Punk got hurt, and that was the first domino.
Yep.
CM Punk gets hurt, and then it's like, oh shit! Well, we've worked really hard on building this whole like Seth and CM Punk hate each other thing.
Yep.
So we want to make money off of this, and we can't anymore. What's a match that can make us some money, and what's a good out? Because and this is why, the only reason why I feel like the plan was always Cody Roman and CM Punk Seth is because my guy went to the Royal Rumble, and he won before all this stuff happened. CM Punk wasn't injured yet. CM Punk got booted out of the ring. So CM Punk's angle was going to be, all right, cool. Well, I couldn't win it here. I'm going to win it at the Elimination Chamber.
Yep.
And then that was going to be his redemption arc to get to the main event to fight Seth Rollins.
Yes.
That didn't happen.
Yes.
So now you're in this situation where it's like, well, shit, this guy who we had bet a lot on got injured. Now we need to figure out how we pivot. Cody's a safe pivot. And then you have Rock. Rock's a safe pivot. You're going to make money no matter what. You're going to get a great match with Cody Seth. And you're going to get a fun, you know, like, blast from the past slash storytelling matchup. And maybe the end of the
level main
blockbuster.
Event.
Maybe the end of the Bloodline feud, potentially, or the Bloodline story. Like, there was a variety of ways they could have gone. But it did all start, I believe, with the CM Punk injury. He got hurt. They had to pivot. They didn't know what to do, and they didn't want to leave their true workhorse champion without an opponent at WrestleMania, which is the situation that they find themselves in right now, and they're going to rectify.
But also consider this. I mean, it's easy to look back in hindsight and say that maybe this is what it was referencing, that maybe this could have been a plan, is when Punk said to Seth, I know what it's like when a bigger star comes in and takes something from you. And
yeah,
obviously it seems like he's talking about himself taking that, you know, winning Rumble. And
that happened to him.
Main event. Yeah. Right. But it's also is hindsight. You can look at it as foreshadowing of maybe was The Rock maybe included in the plans to begin with, because yes, there were always rumors that Rock was going to face Roman at some point. We've all been expecting
that match. I can tell you for sure has been discussed and planned at some point for years. Like,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, for sure.
That I think been that on the docket sure. for at the right time and place.
Yeah.
But just waiting for it.
They just didn't know if they can get the timing. I mean, look, right. I did two seasons of a TV show with the guy. Haven't done a third one. Why? It's like, you know, this show was successful. It was just that
he's doing 8 million other things.
He's got a lot of other things going on.
Right.
We were on set shooting Titan Games. He was filming two other things at the same time. Yeah, so, Same schedule. He would, do a thing, film that, come in, film the other thing. So, honestly, I think that they were just even luckier that they were able to, nail him. But, obviously, him getting on the board of TKO and all that stuff definitely
influences
makes
things.
Him... Yeah, be right. more involved, an easier decision now outside of back then when really it was only serving one person, right? And and there was no real reason for him to come back, because genuinely, yes, I know everyone I've ever talked to, any wrestler I've ever talked to, loved everything about the experience, right? But it's why go back and, make someone else more money and you're not barely going to see a cut of that? So fuck it,
Yeah,
and so I think... So here's another question I have. Do you think, based on what you've seen so far, I mean, they fumbled it, right? They fumbled it when Rock came out and everyone online went ape shit and everyone starts chanting, we want Cody at everything, right? Do you think they've
recovered that? And I'll tell you
this
really quick, too. Mm-hmm. The online makes a difference, especially when it's really overwhelming. But,
right.
I mean, as we all know, and I can tell you, even... And I'm telling you to the audience at home, even if thousands of you tweet, they don't care. You know why? Yeah. Because there's millions who don't use Twitter. There's millions who don't go on Facebook and talk about it. So they, as long as their ratings and all this stuff, but I'm telling you when they start hearing it from the kids.
This reaction was so big.
Dude, at house shows, they're playing videos. His face pops up, and house shows full of people are going, boo. Now they're viscerally experiencing it. So, it was just beyond, a bunch of angry tweets.
And also, the only problem that I'm having with this, and only to just dip a little bit into real life real fast, is I don't know if you saw, but there was, this person that just made up a thing that, people were chanting... against The Rock or something like that regarding Maui refunds or something.
Yeah.
Absolutely disgusting. Absolutely hideous shit. Want to just explain that right away. Because it's also we oftentimes forget that, Dwayne Johnson also is a massive, massive global celebrity.
Right.
And as we saw with the Super Bowl and how people reacted to 54 seconds of Taylor Swift being on screen.
56, damn it.
I'm so sorry. there seems to be these visceral reactions to it. Also, I have a theory. Okay. I think the Pat McAfee interview was very purposeful.
I think they went into that.
Yes,
and they were we're either going to see if people respond positively or if people respond negatively. And the Cody crybabies was very negative. And they did not want to continue to hammer that home. I think that hashtag is pretty much dead and gone after this last Monday Night Raw. But, we'll see what happens.
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if we see merch, man.
Oh, 100%.
I think we're going to see 100%.
There's a contingent of the crowd who likes that.
Yeah, that's true.
But they're embracing it.
Who had Cody crybabies,
Yeah, because they're embracing it, too. So I don't know. I mean,
the only reason why is just because it was a very unnecessary statement if you otherwise were going to use it. You know what I mean? Like for him to have made the comment to say there are three groups of people, and I think that this group, is just the Cody crybabies. and you're like, okay, that's cool. But and Rock does that. He does that thing where he'll, like, you know, kind of like billboard someone and give them like a thing and like a title. And,
sure,
you know, it's like how Jabroni became a thing and stuff like that. He's just very good at that. Right. But there was something that happened. I think this helps us to kind of move forward here. There's something that happened on Monday Night Raw just the other day. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes stood in that ring and cooked up a five-course meal. It was absolutely amazing. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to like watch the whole thing yet.
Absolutely.
The way that, again, they're pivoting this to incorporate Seth into the storyline is very good, because Seth, I think he's just top of the line. Like, very few people are touching him as far as like what he can do in the ring and what he can do on the mic.
No doubt.
I hope that it starts to relay even more to even more success for him, because he's just, you know, he is putting that World Heavyweight Championship on his back. And then the way that he is putting almost a story on his back as well, because let's not forget that, like, I don't know if the reaction that Seth had on that stage was like a genuine reaction, or if that was like him being like a story. Like, and I want to believe that it was a storyline, because Seth is so good that he can make you believe it. But, man, well, the way that they sold that, dude.
I did find that very interesting. Because honestly, I feel bad saying this in a way, like, for all intents and purposes, other than the fact that they were advertising it as Cody makes his decision, so you kind of needed both champions there. But we knew what was going to happen. Seth didn't need to be there, in theory. No. Right? It was about Roman, Rock, and Cody.
But this and was so, the pivot.
No, but which if you want him to have the same amount of stroke, you need him there too. If you want that title to mean as much as they say,
and they
want to
sell that
mean,
title merch
he's
for sure,
got
so.
To be there.
Yes, yeah. Right. But so I thought it, especially once things he made his decision, it popped off. But like when Seth got right in Rock's face as soon as he slapped him, like it was Seth who was right there. And I did think it was. I'm like, man, for someone like who's in theory going to go off and have another match with Drew McIntyre or somebody.
Yeah.
He's really getting involved here. Like, and that heavily. Was the... They're holding him back. They're doing all this. Yeah. So I'm like, this is going to, I'm like, are we getting a tag match at some point?
But also,
what's going to happen?
He has publicly expressed disdain for like part-timers coming in.
Yeah.
And like, he has said it. I mean, the whole reason why we were even getting the Seth Rollins CM Punk storyline is all because Seth Rollins just absolutely battered him verbally in an interview, and it wasn't a good look initially at first. Now they can make money off of it, but it's definitely like you don't know when Seth is crossing the line into real life, and I like that. I like that. There's just this. You just never know with him, right? It really goes with his personality and the character that he's portrayed on camera. But I will agree with you. I felt like he was the one who kind of just looked the weakest at first. But then this promo happened. And then he lays the line about how he is one of the only few people, him and Jon Moxley, to stop Roman Reigns. That he was like, he's like, I know how to do this. And then at the end, him saying, let me be your shield. And the crowd pop was just I'm just like, these two men, like the promo game has just changed. And actually, Matt, that is, I want to ask you that, because I always felt like you were so good at that. Better than very, very few people at the time when I was watching like NXT. You just grab a mic and it was like full confidence through and through. Do you feel like the promo game has changed? Do you feel like it's no more about like bombastic, loud declarations, that it's more like methodical? Because Cody's whole style is like very different in comparison to what, you know, even WWE audiences are trained to.
I mean, that's something that is been worked on. I mean, it's obviously there's still a lot of people who are very greener on the gills and just give you, hey, I'm gonna meet you over the edge, brother, kind of thing. There are still a lot of people who do crummy crap like that, who just grab
and
a mic and start
like
yelling.
It. And we still like it, you know? It's
sure.
Still great.
But I think it's dependent. Like. I think it's dependent on the character.
It
too.
Does. That's there true, there are times, but like, here's something Dusty Rhodes did, Cody's father, with us in developmental, as he was kind of the head of creative and character, and like we did promo classes with him and everything like that, as well as Triple H is something he wanted to incorporate. Like, we would not only have Dusty helping us with characters, we had acting coaches come in and stuff like that. So they from day one that I was there, it was, why, if you're going to yell, why are you yelling? If this is the first time we're seeing you, or if you're just talking about an issue for the first time, like, why, if you're starting here screaming,
you have nowhere to go.
Why am I going to care 4 weeks from now when you're still just talking the same way?
And I think that it works really well in those old days.
It's conviction. Yeah. Because we're just trying to get attention. Back in the old days, it was just louder, brighter. The characters were
clowns. You also didn't have weekly episodic television, right?
Yeah.
So you did, but it wasn't the same way, right? It was just matches, promo.
So, you know? they definitely have put a strong emphasis on trying to ground people in realistic characters. Now, the sacrifice you make with that is if everybody's trying to do that and be real, you have a little bit less defined and colorful characters. So people can blend together on the roster a little bit. But I think you have a lot more grounded, a lot more people speaking with conviction. And you're believing a lot more of what they're saying.
But I think it also depends on what the... what that drive is, right? There was a point in time, I think, we'll call it the pre-AEW era, so to speak, and AEW in the beginning as well, where it just felt like all storylines were really either just, if you got on being the elite, then you can maybe do something, right? Like if you were in the indies, and then maybe like people can like know, but it wasn't anything like terribly profound, depending on the circumstances. But for the most part, all the stories were just, I'm a really good wrestler and I want to be better than you and I want to win the title. And sometimes that is all you need, genuinely. And when you really distill Cody and Roman, that is the story. It's I'm better than you, or I think I'm better than you, so I need this belt to prove that I'm better than you. But then it's when you dress it up, right? A bowl of lettuce is just a bowl of lettuce. But when you pull in a couple more ingredients, you got yourself a salad. Mm-hmm. And that is why I think that like nowadays, right, we're just seeing some good salads being made, people. Okay,
got there's Caesar. No such thing. No such thing.
Jake, how? Come on, man. There's so many good salads. There's like a variety: taco salad,
I'll give Greek you taco salad,
Italian salad,
Greek salad.
You know,
salad.
Like
you're just naming countries and putting salad after
Puerto Rican salad.
Yeah,
Alabamian salad.
That's jello ribs. Salad. Yeah. Yeah.
That's actually a whole bag of Ruffles mayo macaroni thrown salad. Into a macaroni
yeah,
salad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I
potato just, salad. That's Alabama salad.
That's
salad.
Where we are right now. We're like, I think, yes, you're right. It can borderline on everything feeling the same. But I think that what has been helping is everyone is in essentially the same-ish storyline, except it's the little things that they add that make it different. And they're making you pay attention to these little things now. And I appreciate that a lot.
No, I agree with that 100%.
Because oftentimes we would see these storylines and they really wouldn't make a lot of sense. Or they'll just end and then the person like just moves on. But to reference that Seth Rollins promo again, I mean, this guy literally went back and mentioned like 12 years, I think he said, of the experience that they've had together and brought that back. Now, the reason why I thought that was utterly brilliant was because this is probably the biggest WWE has been in like a really long time, both from a awareness perspective, but also money-wise. I mean, these guys are cranking in cash currently. And you have more eyeballs on your product than ever before. So it's really refreshing to see them just go to the well, talk about old storylines, or even just a loose reference to it. And hopefully that would encourage someone. And if WWE's smart, they'd coordinate with Peacock or they'd coordinate with whoever's distributing their content to create collections that tell these like small stories. The Shield collection, find these matches.
They've been
doing
that
on
YouTube, I believe.
Yeah, and they've been. It's really good. It's just like you have these like long winding stories. Build upon it, right? And you have the platforms to do it now. So, yeah, it's really exciting. But now, I guess the question I have though is that do you have now that we know the main event is going to be Cody Roman? I mean, does Cody go over? Does Cody finish the story? Does that benefit WWE to finish the story?
Yes, I do think you're in a place where you have to. I do. It's If he doesn't, I think you'll lose a lot of stock in the character of Cody Rhodes. Yeah. I think he is someone who they see into leading into like this next kind of era. Maybe not like a Cena level face of the company, but like a,
I don't know, honestly,
potentially, but one of the for sure faces of the company. Yeah. I think you kind of have to. I think you're going to lose a lot of goodwill if you don't.
Because this is the one that makes the most sense, right? But the thing is, though, is like, did it make sense? It made sense with Sammy, right? It made sense with Jay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, like, I mean, it made sense with Drew, right? So, although Drew's story is different, but it makes sense with Drew.
It made sense that they should have won.
Yeah, that they should have ended the Bloodline story there. So, because it's like, I'm fearful that they're not going to pull the trigger because they haven't really pulled the trigger on the Bloodline story yet. And like, when you do this, you're pulling the trigger on both stories. Like, that's what you're doing right now. You're shutting down both stories.
I think if you have Cody go over, that starts the downfall of the Bloodline, right? Because to me, the more I think about it and the more I've watched what's happened since last year and even since last week with the press conference, I'm thinking last year's WrestleMania was Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah.
Okay. No one thought the bad guy was going to win.
Yeah.
Nobody thought it was. And people were pissed when it happened.
One day.
You know,
I went out one day. I had Valorant. I had VCT. I had to run from Santa Monica all the way down to Englewood so I could make my way to that damn thing. Also, I could freaking watch Cody finish this damn story.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Everyone bought tickets to see the Avengers take down Thanos, right?
Yeah.
And it didn't happen. And it just made, when it finally did, that much more delicious. And I think that's what they're doing here. And that's even something that Triple H hinted at of like, just let me cook. Just let me cook and trust me. And I think WWE has been looking for that next Cena, right? They're always, they always,
I mean, you're always looking for your next star.
You're always looking for your next star. And the response that Cody has gotten, because when you look at how he was doing in AEW at the end of his run with AEW, and how he was welcomed when he came into WWE, he has a lot of that potential.
That was also just a bizarre situation.
It was a very bizarre situation. It was very bizarre. But to see the reaction that he was getting toward the end of his AEW run, to how he was welcomed into WWE, and people are singing his theme song every time he comes out, the woes and the pyro. And I mean, he's being set up to be that. And now when you have Seth come in, you know, Cody's your Cap.
Yeah.
Right. Cody's your Captain America. Seth is your Iron Man. He made Ultron, right?
Yeah.
Roman's Ultron. Roman is Ultron. And now here comes Thanos to present all these other problems. And what's going to happen? How does he deal with the Bloodline? How does he take that away from them? He's going to go back to all the people that they hurt.
Ooh.
He's going to go back. That's why the thing with Seth happened, right? You got Cap and Iron Man coming back together. They had their problems.
Right.
They had their civil war. Ooh. And now they've come back together, right? And now he's gone to Sammy and said, "I'm always there for you." Sammy was hurt by him. Ooh. You're gonna go to Jay. Jay's somehow gonna get involved.
You're gonna go to
all these people that have been affected and hurt and damaged and taken down by not just Roman Reigns, but the Bloodline. And now
that's good.
And now they're gonna go in there. They're gonna keep Rock at bay. They're gonna keep Solo at bay. They're gonna neutralize all of that.
It's gonna be like when Triple H and Sting fought, right?
Yes,
and like everyone kind of came out. And it's so gonna feel like that, maybe.
Yes,
but
and
better.
So we're gonna see that moment in the middle of the match where all it is Cap with Mjolnir. Gonna go take down Roman. That's what is going to happen. I'm telling you, that's money. That's money.
That is money.
That's where I think that this whole thing can go, because, I mean, this is a years long story. this does feel like their phase one, right?
Yeah.
This is showing what the kinds of stories that WWE can tell, and I think has shown that they're invested in and want to do more of.
Yeah.
And I think Cody's got to win, because like I said, after that, that's when you see the downfall of the bloodline. Oh, Rock, you didn't do what you said you were going to do. You were going to help me keep the title, keep this title in the family. So now it's Rock and Roman later.
When now we still have the title.
And then, you could turn Roman face.
You could
right?
turn
because
Roman
then you
face.
Because then you could just keep leaning on Rock.
And then he has a whole different, and then he has a whole new run that he can do. And it's a whole, you know, Roman trying to get some sort of redemption from the man he was to the man he's become. You know, like there's so much that you can do with him when you go.
Or we're not going there. Roman's.
Or he loses and it's all bullshit. No.
Or Roman. This begins the Roman redemption arc.
Sure.
Yeah.
He loses everything. My old theory was he loses that title. He's going to go away. Maybe he doesn't go away right away.
Yeah.
But then if the Rock's heel turn, even if he's extremely part-time, he shows up, you know, once every few months or something like that, if he's still able to, if he can, maybe he takes over the bloodline.
Yeah.
Roman fails at WrestleMania. I told you. The one thing,
if you notice too, Roman's fallen in line behind Rock.
Literally, at the press conference.
Yeah, exactly.
Follow me out, little brother.
Yeah.
The champion is following behind his big cousin. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that was intentional, because sometimes they miss those things. But like, if it wasn't, or if it was, brilliant. And the
because it made Roman look storytelling. Weak. It made Roman look weak for like the first time ever, but not in like a bad way. It was like, oh, at the end of the day, he's just like a scared kid with his title, and oh, here comes the person he idolized. Now
he sees the walls crumbling around him,
and I think that in the story itself, right, and where they pivoted to the, and then we'll, I think, you know, this is what we'll say, and then we'll wrap it up on this particular subject, but still more to talk about, funny enough, might as well, fuck it. So the only thing I will say is that it felt like what they wanted to get away with was, okay, Roman's going to make the decision, right? This is how they bail themselves out of this. Like, oh, in the end, it was just too confusing. Turns out Cody couldn't make a decision. He could be an adult and make the decision. So I'm going to make the decision, and I'm going to fight The Rock. And it was literally at that moment when he said The Rock. I was like, okay, cool. So we're doing Rock. We're doing Cody and Roman.
I just love
how that works, right? And then there was, you know, what The Rock said and the family tree, which obviously, you know, like amazing, the legacy of the Anoa'i family. But let's not act like that was a great Photoshop opportunity for millions of memers around the world. Because the format that I've been seeing now, it's just genuinely been hilarious. Like, take a look at this. it's like some crazy stuff happening.
Hey, promo idea for us, I think. I don't know.
Take a look at this. It's so good. And I think that, like, AEW, okay? So I think this week we're going to spend, like, a majority of our time on where the wrestling world is right now and what they're paying attention to. And it is currently the WrestleMania storyline and what is going on with AEW and their championship picture, which has been quite fascinating. Now, I've been following it, but Jake, on the other hand, hasn't really been that privy to what's going on in AEW as of late. So, Jake, how have you found your time diving back into All Elite Wrestling?
Yeah, I wanted to, when you reached out to me a couple months ago about the possibility of doing this, I hadn't really been following it, whether due to time or personal whatever. And I haven't watched AEW in a few years. Like, I've been very much out of the loop. But when you got back in touch with me about wanting to do this, I had the idea to do a little experiment. Since we're focusing on the storytelling, one of the things I wanted to see is how, coming into it blind, how are the storylines from the perspective of someone coming in completely fresh? Because I think that's important in episodic television, not just in wrestling, but just in general. Of, you know, you may not get all the details, but coming in, I feel like you should know a little bit where things fall. You know,
and
I kind of wanted to see how that was and what jumped out to me. What caught my eye? And you're right. The first I've watched was last week.
Okay.
Last week's the first I've watched in a while. I watched Dynamite, and they opened with Hangman and Swerve. I thought that was a fantastic match. I'm immediately interested and invested in that story. Because then after, you know, they had that segment backstage with Samoa Joe, who is just, he's like someone put the mind of a cult preacher in Godzilla. Like, he's just like.
That's a great way to put it.
That is an unreal description of Samoa Joe. He's fantastic.
He's fantastic. Really is. Everything that he touches, I think, is gold. Makes
Watch
me excited
Twisted
for,
Metal, everyone.
For
Watch
season two.
Twisted
I'm
Metal.
Excited about season two.
Oh,
he's
my
so
God.
Good in that.
So
he's
good.
So,
he's just
so
a body
really
actor.
Good.
He's not even doing voice acting. And just his like body performances as Sweet Tooth is just so freaking good. Anyway, Watch Twisted Metal.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So like just things that, because look, I mean, dude, I took notes. I took all kinds of notes here about, you know, just kind of watching.
Diligent.
Love it.
AEW wastes no time. They just jump right into the wrestling. And I liked that about this. I liked them opening with Hangman and Swerve because it puts some urgency on it. You know, these two obviously hate the shit out of each other. And you know, want to get them going. But like I said, I thought it was a fantastic match. I thought Taz in particular did a great job relaying the history between the two for people who weren't really familiar. And Taz is another guy who's just like, I mean, he was incredible in the ring, but man, on commentary, he's phenomenal. The guy knows how to tell a story. And I'm just forever and always impressed by him.
I don't know if I liked the draw.
Okay, why is that? Because that is like an AEW trope. So I'm kind of curious as to why you don't like it.
It kind of made Hangman look like a bitch. Now, I don't know if that's the point.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everything I know of Hangman is he's, you know, he's pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And
I'm
going
to.
But I know.
Cowboy. Right?
But I also know that he and Swerve do not like each other. Swerve has given him a lot of problems from what I can tell. He won that the crazy blood drinking match, which was that the goal? Was that like a tables match, like first to drink the blood loses?
You know, you want to say no, but honestly, I think at some point they all just were backstage and were like, you know what, guys, let's just end it once we drink the blood.
Right. Yeah. I'm all interested. Right. I'm interested to see where it goes. I get them wanting to put all three of them in there. I don't know if, like I said, I don't know if a draw is necessarily the exact way that I don't know how I think I wanted it to end. I think you always just want to see something definitive in you want to see somebody win. You want to see somebody lose. And a draw is fine, but Hangman not wanting the five more minutes. If it had maybe been, it would have been good to me if they'd done the five more minutes and then it's still a draw. Like, I would have accepted that.
So he agreed, and then it was still a draw.
I think I would have liked that better instead of him just saying, "Nah, I'm getting out of here. I don't, you know." So I don't necessarily
100%. I actually agree with that.
Yeah.
Okay. So I
don't know
how
much I like that.
Here's my interpretation of what is currently happening right now with Hangman and with Swerve. So that was a double turn. That's what that was.
That's what I thought it could be.
We saw two characters that were going down. And now I don't think Swerve is like completely turned, right? But I know that he is definitely going down that path. But we do know,
crowd was very much on Swerve's
side.
It's
Swerve's house.
Oh, yeah.
It's Swerve's house.
Swerve, yeah.
The reason why this is happening is because the reaction for Swerve Strickland is just so powerful right now.
Sure.
That like it just makes sense that, you know, he's quickly becoming the face of the company, but also he is quickly just establishing himself as an ace, you know, wrestler as well, which I think is something that oftentimes we forget. It's like, technically in the ring, there are very few that are as good as Swerve Strickland is at this point in time. So this is my take on the story and where we are right now. So Hangman Adam Page and Swerve Strickland have hated each other for an incredibly long time, but Hangman has never beat Swerve. And, you know, narratively, as well as for Swerve, it always made more sense for Swerve to defeat Hangman because Swerve came in as, like, the NXT WWE guy. he got put into a tag team. He was in, you know, the Limitless Swerve in Our Glory with Keith Lee, and they were doing their thing. And then, you know, he like turned his back on Keith Lee, and then he started doing Mogul Embassy. And, you know, he had to like establish himself as like a character. Who is Swerve Strickland, right? And he has found that character. He understands the person who's playing Swerve Strickland, like he knows who he is now.
Right.
And that is when I think wrestling is truly at its best, when they like have the understanding of the character that they're depicting. It's why Hulk Hogan was so good for so long, because he just knew what he needed to do, right? What his role was. Swerve is in a very similar position. So Hangman has been taking L after L. He's lost a fair bit of big matches. He was the AEW World Champion. He lost it to CM Punk. That was a thing. Then he went back into the tournament to try and win the title again. Lost on that one. Mox ended up winning. Never really got to that point. Just kept on going. Then was in some tag team stuff and kind of floundering with the Young Bucks for a little bit while they were figuring out what they wanted to do. And now it seems like where they're going is a desperate man looking for answers anywhere he can find it.
Sure.
And he has identified that this guy who has been a thorn in his side for the longest time just continues to be successful despite him being an absolute shit person, right? And Swerve Strickland.
Yeah.
And right. He's probably like, yo, I'm going to do this myself. And then I also think too, at the other side of it, it's that when you think about it from the narrative perspective, Swerve, or Hangman rather, owed Swerve nothing. Nothing. He did not need to give him five more minutes. Swerve Strickland's made Hangman Adam Page's life a living freaking hell for weeks and months on end on AEW programming. So it doesn't make sense if we want to talk about consistency. Okay, why would he, a guy who now is getting very desperate, who is kind of pushing aside the I'm the hero of the story, and he's definitely being more like, yeah, no, I'm going to do this shit. And also, it's good for him because the character needs an adjustment. You know, like it's been years. So just go ahead and mix it up a little bit. That's my
idea. Definitely. Yeah, no, that's a very good point. I mean, that character needs a bit of a shakeup.
It was good. It was like good for a while.
And I think I'm curious to see kind of where they take if it was. The double turn is the intention. It did feel, which I definitely feel that.
Yeah.
It felt a little forced, maybe just a hair, with the walkout and everything like that. To kind of Jake's for earlier point, but what I like, hopefully we'll see more of what you just said, GB. Hope we'll see that more illustrated, that desperation and stuff like that. So we get this a little bit more of an organic feeling turn.
Well, because I think naturally,
Hangman.
What makes the most sense, and you guys could disagree with this, but I think what makes the most sense is that you need to keep the belt on Samoa Joe. He should not lose his belt at Revolution. I don't think Samoa Joe is a transitional champion. I don't think he should be a transitional champion because, firstly, it's Samoa Joe. The guy could still put on 5-star matches in the ring, 5-star promos whenever he needs to. He's a guy who you really can build around. Also, it helps really establish Joe because I think one of the things that Joe did brilliantly as soon as he won that title, because it almost felt like when Joe won, it wasn't Joe overcame the odds and defeated MJF. No. It was MJF lost his title and he just so happened to lose it to Samoa Joe. So yeah. MJF's story continues onward. That we'll worry about that another day. But for Samoa Joe, you needed a reset. You needed like to move the belt away from MJF, move the belt away from Adam Cole, move the belt away from Roderick Strong and the Undisputed Kingdom and all this shit for right now, especially because MJF is relaxing, or not relaxing, but he's resting. He needs to heal up.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't see a reason for Joe to drop this belt at Revolution. And if they do, I will be very disappointed, not just as a fan of Samoa Joe, but as a fan of the story that they're telling here, because it feels like the story they're telling is Swerve Strickland's finally going to get his moment. And they need to build up to that intelligently rather than just going like, Revolution, blah! You know, that I think that would just be the worst call they could make, in my opinion.
No, I agree with that. I think we're going to hopefully start to see, again, an organic, maybe a little bit of a build here for Swerve in a lead. Although, I mean, I was going to say lead babyface kind of on your show.
Now, I would say...
But tweener, right?
We're talking about, he's more... Whatever. Well, I'm trying to think who would even be. I think Adam Copeland's probably your best pure baby face, and Eddie, probably. Yeah, Eddie Kingston and them. I don't know who else is like your white
meat.
Know
if... I don't even know if Adam is after his interaction on Collision.
Oh, I actually do want to talk about that. Anything else on Swerve, Joe, and Hangman before?
No, I think we're just at the beginning there, and we'll see where it goes towards Revolution.
I think Revolution is just going to be the beginning. And also, pay attention, right? I think if you're watching, just pay attention to the fact that it does feel as if they're going to start building up some new aces. They need new big names that are going to sit alongside Okada if he is to make his way over. That would be helpful for Will Ospreay. Who will also be another big name. But I think like when those guys come in, it's going to be more or less like they're going to need a champion that they can like bounce off of, that can like carry it. So really the only ones is Joe and Swerve, you know? And if you give me Swerve Strickland versus Will Ospreay, I don't know if I should wear clothing or not, you know? Like, I'm just not sure.
God.
I don't know if I should just watch it and just let... bask in its glory as it just happens to me, you know. I don't know
what on this road yet. No.
For some reason, I see that episode of It's Always Sunny where Frank is just covered in hand sanitizer. I just see that you doing like
just,
that,
just glistening
just
on the
glistening.
Sun.
Oh god!
As my dog stares at me in utter confusion as to what's going on. But yeah, so you actually did mention Adam Copeland and Daniel Garcia. That was what I wanted to talk about. I think it's great to dive into this because. There is another thing that's kind of like going on in AEW. And I think because WWE is doing so much build right now for WrestleMania and so much of the attention is being put on like the main feud, AEW has had a real great opportunity to spread its wings. They have lost a lot of like the, I shouldn't say lost, but they have definitely cooled off on some of the bigger players that were on TV each and every week. You know, your Moxleys of the world who'll just show up and have a great match, you know, because he wants to. You know, even Bryan Danielson not being, I think it was like 2 weeks of Collision that I haven't seen a Danielson match. I'm fairly certain. I could be wrong, but,
unless you count on Dynamite when they, with CMLL, that's the only thing that I've seen Danielson on.
And, you know, I feel like, and this kind of takes us to our little around the squared circle thing where we want to just kind of talk about the different little stories that are happening all around that could potentially become bigger stories. For me, it's the Adam Copeland, Daniel Garcia hot streaks. They've been building this incredibly well. Daniel Garcia is a character that needs to find himself. He's always been a part of like teams and, you know, never really was a guy who like flew on his own, but you always knew that he was a great wrestler because he was the Ring of Honor pure champion. So you knew that this guy was talented, but he just could never break out of it. They've been doing a really good job of like making him an individual. And then on the other side, they had to incorporate Edge into AEW without him just being in his little pocket dimension fighting Christian the entire time. So yeah, Matt, I mean, has there been any thing on your end that you're like, oh yeah, I kind of am curious to see where this little story is going to go potentially?
Well, it's a very, I don't want to say played out, but it's a pretty classic formula that they, because you're right. That was my worry too, was that it came in, did all the stuff with Christian, which everybody wanted to see. It's great. And that's always on the vine there too. We can always go back to that, whatever. But yeah, he just can't get stuck in that forever.
Yeah.
And when we're talking about characters and story, we'll have to do an entire episode on Christian's Cage's most recent just run with
It's honestly, again, it's brilliant. It's brilliant.
It's fantastic.
Like, it's insane, man.
But, you know, Adam Copeland, Edge, kind of doing a little bit of the John Cena thing. They remember the old U.S. title open, right? There's
the Cope Open, baby.
Yeah, I want to have these banger matches with guys who I feel maybe don't get enough of a spotlight week in and week out.
And you know who John Cena did that for? Cody Rhodes.
A lot of people. Yeah, Cody Rhodes. He did a lot of Kevin Owens. I mean, I remember,
Adrian Neville,
Claudio.
Claudio, that's right. Like all these guys got like banger U.S. title matches. That was the thing that like hooked me on John Cena. I was like, John Cena's lame. I'm never going to watch a John Cena match that was interesting. Nope. And then he just started proving to the world that he knew how to wrestle because he always knew how to wrestle. It was, you know, you can't be there otherwise. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, but like, so he's kind of offering that opportunity. And what that does is at the, it's kind of a win-win. At the very least, somebody who maybe doesn't get as much TV time as they deserve or whatever gets a big highlighted, spotlighted moment match with a Hall of Famer, right? Somebody yeah. like Adam. But then you're kind of it's a little bit of a wrestling throw it at the wall and see what sticks. Mm-hmm. If there's a particular amount of chemistry with somebody, and you know, this thing with Garcia, it's a little bit more than just, all right, next week the Cope Open continues one on one. They yeah. added a little bit of spice with the promo on Collision mm-hmm. this week. So maybe this can grow into out of this just open challenge, because those can get repetitive over months, right? Yeah, but yeah. it's a great way to kind of start incorporating talent.
Well, and the whole reason
just
was
where chemistry is
to him saying, "I need to show that I belong," right? Like that yep. was the whole point of it. So it's like, yeah, eventually you're gonna need to cut this, and it's very clear that like Daniel Garcia is going to be the natural cutoff point of the Cope Open narrative, but now you're left wondering, well, Adam Copeland wants the TNT title and Christian Cage currently has it. They make a lot of sense. But now Daniel Garcia just like tosses himself into this situation. And I got to say, that part is great because it had a basis. It had foundation. He had won a lot. Adam Copeland's won a lot. Naturally, let's figure out who is going to fight Christian next. Danny Garcia is going to be the one to do it, though.
Which would be super cool and super fresh. One thing, and we talk about this in TNA a lot. We used to talk about it in WWE a lot as well, and I always talk about it with Tom. It's a bit of a pet peeve of mine.
Mm.
The old adage we always say is wrestlers don't make matches. Mm. And it kind of bugs me when they do. Because in theory, they're not in charge. You don't know if we're pretending, you know, we're presenting this like a sport, like we're athletes working under an association.
Yeah.
You can't just go out and go, you know, hey, Muhammad Ali, hey, Floyd Mayweather, we're going to fight. No, somebody has to commission that. Somebody has to say, yes, we're signing this to a match. Whether it's Tony Khan, whether you make a GM or whatever it is, like, you can challenge each other. The challenge is thrown out. You know, I hope as commentators, we always like, man, I hope that match gets made. And then we'll tweet it out that, yes, it's official. It's the number one contendership. But it's a little bit of a story that I don't like when it's just like, yes, all right, whoever wins between us,
big
that
difference.
Just decided now is going to get a title shot.
Big difference with WWE and AEW, right? How they level that.
I think AEW needs an on-camera authority figure that is not Tony Khan.
I agree with that.
Yeah, you know, because Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce at first, firstly, I would love to see Nick Aldis back in the ring. I had a working theory that the feud was going to end with Roman versus Nick Aldis. That was going to be like a match that we were going to get. Only because of Nick Aldis's like absolute disdain for Roman Reigns. So I was like, okay, this is great. And Nick Aldis was literally just holding the world's heavyweight champion not that long ago. So he could still go. Anywho. Right. I agree. There needs to be some kind of like an authority figure. And I think it also just, the reason why I said it speaks to the difference between the two, it's WWE had a wrestler come out and make the match and then turn that into a storyline. Right. Mm-hmm. And then Cody came out and said, no, this is bullshit. Right. Obviously different circumstances, different situation, different stage. But in this instance, you're right. It's like Daniel Garcia comes out. Who the fuck is Daniel Garcia? why does he get to make a challenge? You know what I mean? He's the bottom of the totem pole right now.
But the challenges are fine.
The challenge is fine, yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird, I know, and I'm being very specific.
No, you're right.
This is what I deal with week in and week out. But the idea that like, to end it, they said, okay, you want to fight me? I want to fight you. Shake hands. Whoever wins between us will face so-and-so for the title. It's like, you have bosses here. Yeah. Like somebody has to make this. You don't just get to do that.
Yeah.
That might be a little bit more of a me thing. Cause I just like to see a little bit of like continuity of like authority in these kind of situations. Again, we're presenting the reality of a sports federation, right? A wrestling.
Yeah. It's a show about a sports federation.
Like I said, it's got to be there's got to be someone that's not Tony Khan. Tony Khan needs a middleman. He can come on and make his huge announcements all he wants of like,
but you also don't
I'm
need
cutting
to have
sugar out of my diet because that's about how that announcement felt.
You don't need to have like the person who's signing the checks and sitting, you know, in the back of Gorilla being the person out there playing the authority figure. You simply just don't.
No, especially
the only reason why
every
we became predisposed
camera,
to is because of Vince.
But yeah, but like, especially when every time he's on camera, he looks like he's reading a message from someone who kidnapped him. Like the, I have a huge,
not everyone's good on camera.
I know. So get some
right,
training.
Exactly. So get but somebody who's good on
his
camera.
It's his company, though. He can't help it. Like, I know what you're saying. Like, it's just like, I get it. I'm with you. I don't disagree. I don't, because honestly, it's like, it also just helps to push storylines forward. It just does.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's better than
even,
just, yeah.
Even, I'll tell you who I think, and this goes to some another storyline that jumped out at me that I'm invested in and interested now, who I think you could actually use as an on-camera authority figure is the Young Bucks.
Well, that's what I think they were going to do, and then the Vince thing started happening, and then they've since then have pivoted whatever the Nicholas and Matthew Jackson gimmick is. But yeah, I mean, it seems like that's what they were going to do, but I don't know if they're still going to do it. And did you see Brandon Cutler's tweet by any chance?
I did. See that.
No,
yeah.
I didn't see it.
He basically just tweeted his sources backstage confirm Adam Copeland and Eddie Kingston are rubbing people the wrong way with what they're saying on camera. And then it's just a picture of the two of them talking. And squared circle ate that shit up, bro. Yeah. They were just like, oh, yeah, give me that juice about the Young Bucks. I want to talk all this. Oh, wait, the source is Brandon Cutler? Yeah. It's totally a storyline. Yeah. It was great to watch happen on Reddit. Oh, it was amazing, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I guess so, right, Jake? I mean, I guess they go that route, maybe? I guess.
I don't know. I mean, I could see that happening. It's always fun to have an adversarial authority figure. You know, I think that often makes things interesting.
Don Callis.
Let me tell you, Don Callis. Don Callis looks like a sun-dried Dwayne Johnson.
With a Harry Potter scar.
Yeah, when I saw him,
I love the paint on the scar. It kills
me
every time.
When I saw him, I was like, that looks like someone bought The Rock online and then washed it and it shrank in the dryer.
Yeah.
That's how Don Callis looks to me. Like, oh, my rock shrunk and now it's a Don Callis.
Oh, man.
No, I don't think it should be Don Callis.
Maybe not.
But I think if you have an adversarial authority figure, I think that's how you can also develop some more faces over in AEW. You know, I think that would be interesting to see them lean more into that. And of course, you know, them booking themselves into matches and you know, everything going on with staying in Darby.
That's going to be fun to see how that kind of plays out.
Yeah, I'm very interested in that. And I like the promo that they did after beating Scrubs, you know, of just like, we're the good guys here. Like, that's always, I think that's a fun angle to take.
Ideally what they do there, because this is what it felt like to me, because I think like Big Bill and Ricky Starks were great, but they just, for some reason, could not seem to like get that time to like really push forward with anything, because so much was happening. And also too, they just have like a million belts, which is a problem in of itself.
Yes.
I think what they're going to do is after Revolution, they're going to have, I don't think they're going to have Sting and Darby drop the belts. I think Young Bucks are perfectly fine taking the pin and letting Sting have, like they always say, a wrestler goes out on their back on the way out. But genuinely speaking, like, why?
Because you put over the next generation.
Yeah, well, the Young Bucks are fighting them in this fucking match, and they've won like 30 tag team championships. So I don't think you need to put them over at this point. You know what I mean? Like,
but then what happens?
Just drop the belt. Drop the belt. Do the tournament. You have a reset of your tournament thing. I don't. It's just that what's going on with their tag team titles right now, man? Like, no one seems to want the belts.
Sure, but then,
outside
the
of FTR.
Here's the thing, and that's fine. Then they need to build up more tag teams. But then the Young Bucks win the tag team titles and are dominant asshole EVP.
Oh yeah, then you could do that.
You got to build up tag teams to face them. I just hate.
You hate tournaments.
And yes, here we go. Another just vacated.
I don't disagree.
And that fucks Darby. Because I was a champion, but because he's retiring, I'm not a champion.
I'm not a champion anymore. You know, you're right.
I was an L take.
I deserve to hold the egg on my face. I'm gonna make sound effects for womp womps.
We should be able to hit buttons that make eggs fall on the other camera's faces. Or something.
I'm gonna do that. Yeah, no, you're not wrong. It will make more sense for the Young Bucks. It's just that, oh man, another Young Bucks tag team title reign
for sure. But given
they
got to
do something different. They got to do something different.
Yeah.
And if they don't, then just give the belts back to FTR. Or give it back to Big Bill and Ricky Starks. Let them do something. I don't know.
Something.
But, yeah. All right. Well, I think it's a good place to close it. Right? You guys feel pretty good?
It's wild how much I'm like, there's still so much on the Vine. But that's what we love about this damn industry. There's so many stories, big and small. And we're going to be talking about it every week.
I had like a whole list of like things I wanted to talk about.
There's like three or four on here. And then even in the back of my head, I'm like, oh, wait, there's that.
Like, I'm actually really looking forward to next week where we get to do it again.
I took 6 pages of notes just on AEW. Like,
And by the way, just so you know, if you're watching, you're like, oh, they didn't talk about TNA, or they didn't talk about New Japan, or they didn't talk about all of it's on the table.
Yes.
I definitely do think, though, that for us, and as much as I do love New Japan Pro Wrestling, I want to learn more about how they tell their stories. Because I know that they do their stuff primarily in like press conferences and then post-match like react kind of promo-y type of things. But I want to learn more, you know, and that's what I'm really excited about with doing this show is because we just get to learn more and watch more pro wrestling. We also do old stuff too. And talk about old feuds. Cause that is something I have been wanting to do for a while now.
I'll get back on Doink Crush.
I watched recently because a friend of mine came in from out of town and they had saw the podcast announcement. They were like, oh my God, it's so great. You know, looking forward to it. And then my friend Lauren, she was like, okay, give me like one of your favorite storylines that you'd seen. And I really thought, but I was like, okay, let me give him something with wrestlers that they'll know. And I showed her Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock. WrestleMania X7, as well as the TLC match. And even though that ending was like kind of the weird definitive end of the Attitude Era, man, the storyline buildup to that freaking matchup was so interesting that you genuinely felt like it was real life. So that right there, she was hooked. Converted a new fan. And that's pro wrestling, baby. That's pro wrestling. Anyway, guys, that's going to do it for us. So let us know what stories you want us to cover as far as old stories goes. Let us know your thoughts regarding what's going on. And again, it's from a narrative perspective. So if you want to, talk about backstage drama and, this is going to happen because this person doesn't like this guy, that's fine. I get it. But that's not really the point of this. The point is really to talk about the writing, what the promos, how they're trying to tell their stories in the ring, and then what is happening outside that can influence those stories, right? It's not solely on the dirt sheets. So, yeah, just have fun with it, people. Let us know what you think in the comment section down below. If you want to connect with us on Twitter, you can do so at ReBookPod. You can also follow us or subscribe to us on YouTube. You'll find all that crap there. So go ahead, have fun. It'll be a great time. And we're very much excited to join you on this journey. And we'll catch you guys next week. Peace.
Take care.